Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 1025-1063, the game. We are live from the game studio, sponsored by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. And, of course, you can watch us streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook Live every day. Our video streaming is brought to you by Superbook. Joining us now, Outkick360's Jonathan Hutton. Hun, we are playing a little game of playing GM. So put yourself in the Titans GM chair. How do you move forward next year? Does that involve a rebuild? And if so, what does a rebuild mean to you as the Titans are concerned?
Well, it starts, Caroline, with a rebuild of the offensive line. That's going to fit the identity of Mike Vrabel, who's going to be involved in the process of the interview of the new general manager. And it's also going to fall in line with Amy Adams Strunk because she's including Mike Vrabel in the future of the rebuild. So it starts with the O-line, which, by the way, is where John Robinson earned the job initially. And from there, you have to build out. Now, I don't think Mike Vrabel signing up for a quote-unquote rebuild. That's just not in his DNA. I've heard a lot of talk about, oh, you re-sign Josh Dobbs and let him start the season. No, that is not in his DNA. And I don't think that's in Amy Adams Strunk DNA either. And let's be honest, if you're not winning, Amy Adams Strunk doesn't want you. So the pitch needs to be about winning while also restructuring what they're doing up front, which is why John Robinson was fired.
Jonathan Hunt is with us, Outkick 360. And I think you mentioned the position group that I am looking at moving forward going into this draft. I know the quarterback is the sexy and fun thing to talk about. The Titans potentially trading up in the draft, getting a Bryce Young, getting a CJ Stroud. But to me, this offseason is all about the offensive line.
Well, I mean, I could see four new starters potentially. It may not be four new starters, because you can't make every single move you'd like to make and have them all start week one.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, that has to be where they start. Taylor Lewan has had two knee issues over the last three seasons. To me, it's not a conversation to be had. I don't think Lewan is back, and then you start just moving through from left to right. And I think you can make a case for practically everyone as to why you could have someone starting over them. You can't make every move there, Caroline, in the same offseason. You only have so many draft picks. You only have so much money under the cap. But the Titans have to start there because they have to protect their quarterback. It doesn't matter who's behind the offensive line if the guy's going to be beaten down on a weekly basis. And if they're, I mean, Malik Willis was asked to stand in the pocket and throw and not take off and run. But, I mean, that's basically what every quarterback had to do behind the offensive line this year. So I'm intrigued to see how they start it. But I do know it's going to start with the line.
Jonathan, would it surprise you, though, if they were to move up in the draft? Because my thinking is they can't continue to kick this can down the road. They can't. Because every team in their division, not just in their division, in the AFC, they have either identified their franchise quarterback or they're in a position to draft their franchise quarterback. And Titans are one of probably two or three other teams that are holding on to a older quarterback that isn't a elite quarterback. He will win you games, but he won't put you in a position to win a championship. If you're going to keep Ryan Tannehill, which I do believe they need to and restructure it, then you need to do what the LA Rams did. You need to spend the money to surround him with good dudes as well as drafting people so you will stay in that window for at least another year or two, not just in a window of getting to the playoffs. I'm talking about a window of winning a championship.
Yeah, and it starts at quarterback for that. But so it's twofold, right? It's on one hand, you make the trade in the draft that gets you Patrick Mahomes. You identify that MVP. On the other hand, you're the Chicago Bears who traded up for Justin Fields, and you trade away multiple first-round picks in order to move up and get him. And now you're sitting with the number one overall pick again, wondering if you should take a quarterback of your own because he's not the guy. So, you know, is that guy in this draft? And if he is, do you have to get to number one overall, and what's the cost to do it? We saw this with the draft, John Robinson's first draft. He traded away number one to the Los Angeles Rams, and that's where they drafted Jared Goff. We know how that ended up, but that's there's going to be wheeling and dealing. But the question is Bryce Young, I think it's Bryce Young that we'll see the trade up for, is Bryce Young that guy? And if he's not, you can't wager future drafts, especially with this roster that is desperate, desperate for top three round draft picks right now. You can't wager the future on one guy if you're not certain that's the guy. I don't know. Mace, you'll know better than me on this. If Bryce Young's worth it, if C.J. Stroud is worth that guy. Personally, I'm not so sure. And other than those two, I don't think there's a conversation for anyone else. So with that being said, I think the way to stay competitive is to bring back the guy you have and actually draft a prospect that you can develop and bring back Josh Dobbs as a backup. I would be on board with the Hendon Hooker backup plan, but I'm not drafting him high, right? Like he's a redshirt year anyway due to the injury. But I think the Titans, with Tannehill and with Dobbs, present the opportunity for them to do something like that. It doesn't have to be Hendon Hooker, but something like that that I believe they tried to do with Malik Willis, but either they weren't on board with developing him or he just wasn't developable. That's what it comes down to. They've got to get that right. But the right decision can be the guy they have. It doesn't have to be a rookie.
We're talking with Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360. Now, Jonathan, you're right in regards to that. Anybody past Stroud and Young, it's a question mark. He either can, show up and be that franchise quarterback, or he may not be. But it's a roll of the dice, because you look at this draft, and from what you've seen on the field, it's a two-man race between Stroud and Young, mm-hmm. as far as who gets picked number one. But in the Titans' case, I don't think at 11, one, they're going to pick Hendon Hooker. But if they move down in the draft, I don't think Hendon Hooker gets out of the first round. So if they say, well, let's hold on and draft him in the second round, I don't think he's going to make it to the second round. So with that being said, you keep Ryan Tannehill, you get rid of some other guys. I do believe you have to go into the free agency market with some aggression. If you don't go in with some aggression, you're telling your fans that you're not really looking to make this team as good as they can possibly be.
Yes. And it's so that's why how they identify the next general manager is key. So it will be in lockstep with what Vrabel needs personnel-wise. Because, again, you want your general manager and head coach to be on the same page. And you also need to be aggressive in free agency, because you're right, they don't just have starting problems. They have depth problems as well. That's where the draft can come in. But again, you've got 6, 7, 8 picks and only so many picks to go around to really identify and help out and target those spots. So it comes through free agency, who you're going to retain, who you're not. And the list of guys that we could rattle off on this roster for what they're getting paid versus production, there is going to be a lot of turnover, right? I mean, if you look at the 20 to 25, 30% roster turnover, to me, the Titans are at a much higher rate this offseason because of the money allocated to guys, offense and defense, that are not playing up to that caliber, or they're in the boat with where Vrabel's talking about the repeat offenders for soft tissue injuries. So I lean towards being aggressive in free agency and then getting some skill position and speed. Speed is another key word that he used. In the draft.
Now, also, if they don't move up in the draft and to potentially get their quarterback or even that left tackle that they need, because there are other teams ahead of them that also need left tackle, when they've identified their – you think once it's all said and done, if they can't get their quarterback, which move is going to be the most important move? Is it getting the OC – or is it solidifying that offensive line and plugging holes somewhere else?
Well, I mean, I I'm in the camp. I'm glad that they made the decision with Todd Downing. After 2 years, right? Like we, and the inevitable happened because based on what we've seen from the league and DUI, he's looking at least a month suspension anyway. So you had to get someone else ready if you were bringing him back. I think it was inevitable when it happened. They kept him on. Vrabel's loyal to him, and he was loyal to Vrabel, and we knew he was on the way out, and it was clear and obvious, but maybe I didn't see it for the for everything else in front of me. So Downing still won games as OC with a pretty good O-line. You know, they won 12 games, and they worked the different things last year. But it to me, it's a combination of both. You know, you've got to have the OC that's going to mesh well with the current talent. This is still going to be a defensive-minded team that's going to want to run the football, whether or not Henry's back, whether or not the OC is a you know, wants to go deep on first down versus handoff on every first down. It's still the mentality of what they've been because Mike Vrabel remains the head coach, defense and in the trenches. So I would, to answer your question, Mace, I would say O-line is more important because no matter what they have next year, I still think the identity of this team is going to be pretty much the same. They may tweak some things, but I think we'll describe the team in the same way.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, will stick around with us coming up next. Where do the Titans go next? What is the future of the Tennessee Titans, both in 2023 and beyond? We'll get into all of that with Jonathan Hutton coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Outkick 360's Jonathan Hutton is with us. Hutton, you talk about the new GM. How every single decision that the Titans need to make all starts and ends with the new GM that the Titans hire. And the conversation over the last few weeks has been, what will be Mike Vrabel's role with the new GM? In your opinion, what do you think is the best power dynamic between Mike Vrabel and the future GM? And what do you think it's going to be? What do you think they want it to be?
I believe they need it to be personnel with the general manager, coaching and staff decisions with Mike Vrabel. And I don't think Vrabel is against that idea. I don't get the sense that Vrabel wants to take on everything. So with that in mind, he also deserves to be in the conversation of everything. That should be the case within a good GM and head coach dynamic across the league. It's like a Mahomes and Kelsey role where no matter the situation, they know what they're doing and why. So, and I think by and large, he and Robinson had that. So let's start there. But they do need a point person on the personnel side that's going to take care of that side of the business and allow Mike Vrabel to do what he does well, coach of the year for a reason, and using what he has and making the most of what he has and doing it very well. That's the dynamic, and they have to get someone in that's going to identify the right players for the right roles and impact players that are going to help this roster immediately. That has crippled this roster in recent years. Guys who come in and need time. The Titans, if they want to be competitive, don't have 2 or 3 years for a Caleb Farley to figure out whether or not he loves football. So they need to identify that and not have the Isaiah Wilson and the Raidens and the Farleys, and instead get impact players and add more speed and dynamic play to their roster, and that comes through the personnel background of who they're going to hire.
Jonathan Hutton from Outkick is with us. So, Hutt, what you said I think is perfectly logical. So let's talk about the hiring process because
yes.
this is the thing that I keep trying to wonder, and that is let's take Vrabel out of the mix for a moment, and let's just say he has some input, but you're going to make the hire on your own if you're Amy Adams Strunk. Who is helping you make the hire? Do you hire an outside consultant? Are there people that I'm sort of not realizing are there in her inner circle that are helping her with this. I think that's a huge part of this equation.
Well, I mean, behind the scenes, Willie, it's, I mean, by the way, congratulations on Sportscaster of the Year. Let me start there. Well-deserved, and, you know, I've told you this in private, but you're excellent at what you do, so congrats, Willie.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Yes. Behind the scenes, personnel-wise, without Robinson, it's the guys he's brought in, Ryan Calvin and Monty Austinfort. So that, as far as who it would be in her ear for that position, it's those guys who are in the building. Now, in the interview process, Kenneth Adams is in the room, along with Burke Nihil. They have their legal guy, their general counsel, who's also there. And Amy Adams Strunk is in the room. And Mike Vrabel at some point will be too. As far as like a Steve Underwood figurehead that was identifying Robinson, I can't point to anybody like that within the organization like we could in the past. Now, that's not to say she doesn't know or have someone with that. But the timing of it would point to the idea that she has someone in mind or someone is in her ear, allowing her to make the decision when she did, because timing was of the essence, because otherwise the timing didn't make sense. And I figure that's where you're going with it, Willie, but I don't know.
Well, I'm just curious because like you mentioned
other than those two guys.
Well, but you mentioned the two assistant GMs. Like they, I would think, are candidates for the job themselves,
yes.
Right? They're not going to be like, well, let's see if we can help you hire our new boss. You know, it's
right.
So, and then you've got the other members of the family that are that. They're the owners. They're members. They're not football, you know, what talent scouts, if you will, or GM mm-hmm. scouts. So, you know, who's that trusted person that you would lean on to help you? I just think that's a really important thing. If Vrabel's not doing it, because I would keep circling back and say, well, maybe Mike Vrabel might be the best guy to help do that. Or I do. We always laugh in college that people that hire the search firm, right? But there are times mm-hmm. where the quote unquote consultant can be somebody who can help you identify really good candidates. And for example, we've got the Rooney Rule here, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's probably going to be very much nationally something people are keeping an eye on, especially with the whole thing that happened in Miami last year with Brian Flores. I think there's a lot of sensitivity to that. And I think there's going to be a lot of voices saying, hey, let's look at these candidates over here. We got some good ones here. And I heard some of those names get put out there yesterday when nationally some of the names started to surface. So I think figuring out the strengths of all of the great candidates that are out there is going to be essential here. So who can, you know, are you good at doing that? Or is it just, you know, this is just a people thing, right? Amy Adams is the owner. She can just say, I got a good vibe from this person in the interview process. I really like what he had to say or she had to say, whoever it is, and you make the decision that way. It's going to be really interesting about the process here to me.
Yes, and I mean, to her credit, I do believe she's done a good job at hiring. You know, with Vrabel, with Robinson, over the 8 years where she has taken over from what it was to what it is now. So her process throughout all that included, by the way, moving to town. So she's been in the building,
yeah.
and certainly much, much more intertwined with the organization from that angle than she was when she first hired Robinson to begin with. So I do want to mention that. But there are other, like, you know, she identified, and I remember back whenever they hired Robinson, she admitted she knew that Robinson was the guy from the first chat, right, the first impression. And that was also an interview process that included Chris Ballard at the time with the Kansas City Chiefs. And, you know, they're going back to that well, but they're going, based on the reports, they're going through Chicago to get to Kansas City on who they've asked to interview, request to interview, because that kind of that crew that's in Chicago now with Poles was in KC as the assistant GM. And it's always intriguing, too, because, you know, unlike head coaching candidates, it's not like we sit around or the names of the assistant general managers just rattle off the top of anyone's head across the league, right? Like if you see a list of GM candidates for this year, it's probably 100 long, because guys go through the league and look at personnel charts and just start listing guys. It's more interesting on how owners go about identifying that, who wants control, who doesn't. And by and large, Amy Adams Strunk has always deferred football to football, you know, and I think she's done a good job of, and the group as a whole has done a good job of knowing what they don't know. I don't think a lot of owners, by and large, can always say that across the league. And I think that's a reason why they got to where they were, and that's why she's impatient on why she's trying to get back there.
Well said, and I think that's part of being a sound owner, is knowing what you know, knowing what you don't know, surrounding yourself with good people and good decision makers to make the right choice. Okay, so last one from me, Hutt. What about Jeffrey Simmons and how you start the process here? Because of all the things that happened, like I think we were reading that article where I thought it was very insightful, the whole quote of, right now they don't have the money to sign him for what he wants. He was dominating. Then he turned the ankle. He battled through it. I think he's to be commended for playing hurt. But next year we know is going to be a totally different thing unless they can come to a deal. So where would they start on that, and how valuable is he compared to maybe before the injury?
I mean, they've got to bring him back. They have to get him under contract. The guy was the opposite of AJ. Big Jeff could have played his hand the same way. And I think the only thing that kept him from doing that was, number one, he's loyal to the organization that sat at a podium with him, sat at the press conference when he was drafted, with the issues off the field from high school, going to Mississippi State and all that, where Amy Adams Strunk was present and spoke to the media and vouched for him. So I think it starts there. It starts there. But it also, he embodies everything that Mike Vrabel is about. And if you let that guy walk a year after, everyone was crushed for letting A.J. Brown go, and ultimately it was Robinson's decision. But, you know, it's the next version of that for a guy who actually didn't say, pay me or trade me. And instead missed 2 days of a mini camp on a hold in instead of a hold out, and played through injury in a year where he's probably getting $5 million more annually on average per year than what he would have had he signed last year, had the Titans signed him last year. I think what he was referring to, and I haven't talked to Jeffrey about this, I think what he was referring to is a conversation that they would have had with them about not having the cap space to make it work then in the off season. And he didn't really speak on the contract or lack thereof until we saw that article. I believe that's what he was referring to, was an off season conversation, a training camp conversation. Could be more than that, but if it's more than that, the Titans have much bigger issues than just one position or one hire. Going back to what D. May said, and how they need to be aggressive, if they can't sign one of their own that is perfect for the organization, I don't know how they're aggressive in free agency in March.
Last one for you, Hutton. Should the Titans pursue D. Hop?
No. No, and the only reason why is I think the draft capital is more important this year, even for a team that, you know, craves draft picks more than players and trades. I'm normally on board with trying to bring guys in as a piece, but this team, Caroline, is more than one piece away. And I think by and large, when the Julio Jones trade happened, which was not good, and looking back on it, but in the moment, it worked for what that roster was when they made that move. Everybody in the locker room, everybody believed it, right? Like, I don't think you just bring in DeAndre Hopkins and be like, oh, Titans are back. And if you can't say that about a veteran wide receiver, I can't be on board with making a trade to make that work with Arizona. That's just me being probably way more conservative with my moves this year than what I would have done over the last two. But the window isn't the same for this team. They have to build back to that, and they're more than a Hopkins away.
Jonathan Hutton, Outkick 360, joining us every week on Wednesday at noon. Appreciate you for joining us, Hutton. We'll talk to you next week.
All right, thanks. Always enjoy this. Appreciate it.
Appreciate you, Hutton. Now I want to get into that coming up next. What do we think about a potential marriage between the Titans and DeAndre Hopkins? Is it a move that the Titans should pursue? We'll get into all of that coming up next. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Last one for you, Hutton. Should the Titans pursue D-Hop?
No. No. And, man, the only reason why is I think the draft capital is more important this year, even for a team that, you know, craves draft picks more than players and trades. I'm normally on board with trying to bring guys in as a piece, but this team, Caroline, is more than one piece away.
There you go. That was Jonathan Hutton. Outkick 360 joined us last segment. And the news that came down the pipe yesterday, Arizona Cardinals wide receiver DeAndre Hopkins planning a trade away from the Arizona Cardinals. Now, he has 2 years remaining on his deal, about $35 million-ish left on his contract. He carries a $30 million cap hit for the 2023 season. So whenever you have a player like DeAndre Hopkins, who has been a top five wide receiver in the league for the past handful of years, and when he wants to be traded, everyone in the league's ears perk up. Everyone thinks about where DeAndre Hopkins could potentially fit on their team. I don't think it's the right move for the Titans to pursue DeAndre Hopkins. And it's for a few reasons. One being, he's old. He's 30 years old. In NFL years, that's old. He's expensive. $30 million cap hit, and he wants a new deal. Now, Arizona has shown us that they're rebuilding. Mm-hmm. You know, they moved on from their head coach, finding a new general manager. And Arizona wants the picks. So I'm sure that Arizona absolutely would be willing to eat some of the cash in order to get better picks. But I don't think the Titans are in the position right now where they can just dish out draft picks for an old, inexpensive wide receiver. We've been through this experiment before. 2 years ago when the Titans picked up Julio Jones. And I said he's too old, he's too expensive. The Titans dished out a second-round pick and $14 million for him. That is too much for a player that can't, that didn't contribute to your football team. And Chase and Michelle were talking about this earlier, saying the new GM can't be so afraid of the mistakes of the former GM, meaning that the new GM, if they want to pursue DeAndre Hopkins, can't be deterred from that decision because of John Robinson's mistake to acquire Julio Jones. Mm-hmm. So if they feel that way, that's fine. But I can learn from the old general manager's mistakes and say that DeAndre Hopkins feels like a tale as old as time as far as the Titans acquiring old and expensive wide receivers goes. I'm out on the D-Hop train.
Well, I'm not going to say D-Hop is old because when I got released, I was 30 years old, 31, and still was able to play seven more seasons and six seasons where, you know, at least four to six or five to six, they were, you know, really good seasons, 1,000-yard seasons. So I'm not going to say he's old, but I think the difference between he and I, there's a lot of differences. This kid just can flat out play. I think he's the best pass catcher I've seen in the last 10 years, 10, 15 years.
He's a great player.
But strictly pass catchers, there's nobody better than him. But the difference along with all of those things is he's played 10 games in 21 and 9 games in 22, which tells me he has a history of, at least now, of not playing a complete season. The Titans already dealt with stuff like that with their receiver position. They're still dealing with it with Treylon Burks, and hopefully it gets better. So I don't want to then add on another guy that has missed a considerable amount of time over the last two seasons. Now, granted, this DeAndre Hopkins is first ballot Hall of Famer to me. That's just to me. But at this, I think right now with what the Titans need, they're more than one player away. If this was 2 years ago and it was between, you know, DeAndre Hopkins and Julio Jones, it's not even a question to me. You go pick DeAndre Hopkins because at that point you were, seemed to be one guy away from really reaching that point that you wanted to reach. So you bring him in then. Now you're more like 10 guys away from, you know, being a legitimate Super Bowl contender, meaning starters and backup guys. So D-Hop is, and plus you got to pay him a lot of money. He's still going to want $20 million. And are you going to pay that to a guy that has missed, you know, almost 20 games, if not 20 games over the last two seasons? I don't think you, well, almost 20 games the last two seasons. I don't think you do that. I don't think that's smart. Now, if he wants to come in for, you know, $10 million, oh, absolutely. Come on in. You know, I'll sign you 2 years, $20 million. Come on in. You can be our receiver. You're our number one receiver now. But to sign him for 20 plus per year at this juncture, considering how injury prone he's been the last two seasons, Vrabel just talked about injuries. You don't then want to bring in a guy that just came off an injury and make him a focal point of your team.
And I think, too,
yeah, and I think we need to clarify it. There was, I believe, a suspension for performance enhancing drugs in there. I think
yes.
That was this year.
Uh-huh.
Was
six that for the games first this year. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was six of the games that he missed. He missed a couple other games mm-hmm. in there, but I think he had a knee injury. And then the year before he missed six or seven games as well. I'm looking at the, it looks like a thigh or a hamstring or both that he had.
There's a hamstring.
I do. Oh boy, that's all they need. It was another issue with the hamstring historically here. But he will be 31 next year. That partial season he played in 2021 was very productive. This year, when he came back, I always felt, and look, I watched them a little closer than I did some teams because I had Kyler Murray for a while as my fantasy quarterback. It just didn't seem to go well for that whole offense. It was hard to watch that offense at times. It was not a good year, and that's one of the reasons Cliff Kingsbury isn't the coach anymore. But, you know, he is an elite guy. But you just hit on it, D-Mace. It is all going to be about the contract from here. And as Jonathan Hutton said, are they one player away? I would say that at his best, man, he could make a great impact. But at what price? That's the thing. You don't have money sitting around everywhere. You got a lot of other big decisions you got to make with your cap. So I don't know. I would probably say it'd be hard to pull that off, especially if you got to give up something to get him. If he gets cut or something and he's sitting there on the free agent market, that's one thing. But if you're giving up big assets to get him and the money, I don't know. I don't think so.
And I think that's what you're going to have to do, especially considering Arizona's rebuilding. They want the picks. I'm sure
yes.
They'll be willing to eat some of the money if it means getting picks in return. But DeAndre Hopkins has no trade clause, so he is in control of where he lands. Would Tennessee be an attractive landing spot for DeAndre Hopkins? Plus, your thoughts as well. Should the Titans pursue D-Hop? We'll get into your calls, your text, 615-737-1025. And Willie has a trivia question for you for the opportunity to win a pair of tickets to see Whiskey Myers at Ascend Amphitheater on Saturday, May 6th. What you got, Willie?
All right. Tonight with the Predators up here in Toronto, I thought we'd have a little Predator question. Tonight, Cale Yarncroke will be skating for the Toronto Maple Leafs. He signed with them as a free agent. He's had a nice year so far. And with Austin Matthews hurt, he's going to play a big role tonight. So a little history for you. Cale Yarncroke was traded from the Detroit Red Wings to the Nashville Predators back in 2014. Who was the principal player sent back to Detroit in that trade? 615-737-1025. It's right down Main Street. Fastball right down the middle if you're a Predator fan. Who did the Predators trade to get Cale Yarncroke back in 2014? 615-737-1025.
Again, that is, if you are the first person to answer that trivia question correctly, you will win a pair of tickets to see Whiskey Myers at Ascend Amphitheater on Saturday, May 6th. Good luck, Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Caroline, Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. And hey, join 102.5, 106.3, The Game tonight at Nobles, located at 974 Main Street in East Nashville, for a Preds away game watch party. The Preds take on the Toronto Maple Leafs tonight at 6:30 p.m. Come watch the game, get some Preds swag, and also enter to win tickets to an upcoming Preds home game. The Arizona Cardinals are planning to trade DeAndre Hopkins. Should the Titans consider putting a trade package together for DeAndre Hopkins? I personally don't think so. I think that he will be expensive. It's a $30 million cap hit in 2023. You're going to have to dish out picks. That's what Arizona wants. Arizona's rebuilding. Arizona wants the picks to rebuild. They're going to want the picks. I think that the Titans have far too many holes on this roster to just give picks away to a player that may only have a few years left in him. He's 30 years old, which in NFL years, it's getting up there. He's expensive. He's old. He had a 6-game suspension this past season. I just don't think that this team is a DeAndre Hopkins away from being able to compete for a Super Bowl. But there's also another side of this, too, is that DeAndre Hopkins' contract has a no-trade clause. So we could have this conversation of, is it beneficial for the Titans to go after him or not? I know a lot of Titans fans want them to, because that's DeAndre freaking Hopkins. He's a great player. It's the same thing as Julio Jones. Whenever the Titans decided to acquire Julio Jones, to trade for Julio Jones, everyone was so excited because it's Julio freaking Jones. You know, it's a guy who's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer. But sometimes these players aren't the DeAndre Hopkins or the Julio Jones that we remember. The Julio Jones or the DeAndre Hopkins that we know that put up, you know, crazy numbers week after week. Hall of Fame kind of numbers. So I know that Titans fans want DeAndre Hopkins. But would DeAndre Hopkins want the Titans? I think one reason and one thing that would probably be attractive to DeAndre Hopkins, Mike Vrabel was the defensive coordinator when DeAndre Hopkins was in Houston. Mm-hmm. They're hiring a new offensive coordinator, and Bill O'Brien and Tim Kelly are both candidates, probably front runners, at least from where it stands on the outside looking in. Well, they were both in Houston when DeAndre Hopkins was in Houston. So there's already a pre-existing relationship there. They know him. He knows them. They know how he works. He knows the expectations set by those coaches. But I don't know what his priorities are at this point in his career. Is it make as much money as you possibly can? Is it go where you can find, you can chase a ring, you know, get a Super Bowl before you retire? And I don't know the answer to that question. I don't know what his priorities are. But I think that also is a factor in all of this. Does DeAndre Hopkins want to go where he can win a Super Bowl right now? Because if so, Tennessee's probably not the place for him.
Yeah, I mean.
Right, why don't we start with this, D-Mace? Mm-hmm. Let me throw this at you. All right, let's take for a moment the fantasy land that there is no salary cap. Right, because we know that there's maneuverability if you can write the checks, mm-hmm. and you know the loopholes, and this is where a good GM and capologist can help finagle a little bit. But let's just pretend you didn't have to worry about the cap figure for now. What is a best case scenario? Let's just say you got Tannehill as your quarterback, you got Derrick Henry as your running back, you got Treylon Burks on one side, you got a Chigakonkwo young tight end. You've got DeAndre Hopkins as your other receiver. You draft in the first round a left tackle, and let's just say you know you do what you can for the rest of the offensive line. You've got Nate Davis. Let's say Petit Frere is your right tackle. You make do with the other spots. What does that offense look like to you? What's best case? Do you have a top 10 offense there potentially?
With DeAndre Hopkins in the fold.
Hopkins, Burks, Okonkwo, Derrick Henry, Ryan Tannehill is your principal skill guys.
I think in theory.
And in theory, paper, a better offensive line. Maybe not a great offensive line. But
if it's better than last year, this past season's offensive line, with those guys, and I'm just basing it on, you know, what I've seen from Burks, Chig, where I think Derrick Henry is right now, what DeAndre Hopkins can give them. I think they have the potential to be a top 10 offense. If they were worse than a top 10 offense, I think many would be surprised, but I think it all depends on who the offensive coordinator is. And, you know, it would Vrabel concede to the offensive coordinator? Meaning, listen, I know we've been a run-based team for the longest, but we have to change. We have to be more, you know, air-centric in a sense. We're not going to stop running the football, but we have to be able to, you know, win football games and consistently move the ball down the field through the air. And I think Chig, Burks, and DeAndre Hopkins, with a better offensive line, they give you that potential. But it would be the same thing that we saw 2 years ago. The potential is there, but are these guys going to stay on the field? You know, Treylon Burks already proven. I hope he gets better next year, but he spent more time off the field than he did on the field. DeAndre Hopkins getting a little older. Now, will these hamstrings and quad muscle injuries show back up once we got him, or is he over that? Those are all unknowns. We don't, you know, we have no idea of knowing. But on paper, this is a good offensive. That would be a good offense. It would be a top 10 offense on paper. But on paper, 2 years ago, that looked like a top 10 offense with Julio Jones as well. You know, so it just depends.
Playing for now. It'd be a playing for now move with an older quarterback, an aging running back, and an aging receiver. Now, he'll be 31 the next time he takes the field, Hopkins. And then the whole thing is we don't know what it would take to get him, et cetera. But we're talking best case scenario, best case. It's a pretty good looking offense, but is it good enough? Where would it get you? Also knowing, as you've been saying all along, Derek, you do have to have at least one eye on the horizon of, look, we get this new stadium. We would love to have a good team when that stadium opens. And maybe you can just say, look, let's blow it out now. Then we'll break it down next year. And then we'll build it back up for 2026 or whatever it is. I don't know. But it does seem like, you know, it's hard to sit there and say we got a five-year plan. Like, these are all things that a new GM's got to wait, you know, wager on.
Let's go to your phones. Phone lines driven by Wilson County. Hyundai.com. Matthew in Nashville, Texas says, it seems like you'd have to give up too much for Hopkins. Plus, at this stage of his career, he's probably ring chasing. Why not draft a player like Jordan Addison, who you could pair with Burks and can help you right now? I think that's kind of the difficult dichotomy of, do you draft a player or do you defer to a trade or a free agent acquisition of a proven commodity? Of if you want to bring someone in to help you right now, then that's probably going to be a trade or a free agent acquisition. But that's also kind of sending the message of the Titans are going to be going for it. If they acquire DeAndre Hopkins, that's a message to me that, hey, we don't plan on slowing down anytime soon.
Well, if they don't position themselves in the draft to move up, if they stay with their quarterback, and say if they whether they stay with Derrick Henry or not doesn't tell me whether they are rebuilding or, you know, are going for it. The running back position doesn't tell me, because they can bring somebody else in, a veteran guy that's going to get them 1,000 yards, 1,200 yards. That doesn't tell me anything in regards to rebuilding or staying status quo. But
you think that they could just bring in any other running back to replace Derrick?
I think it's not – I'm not trying to get a – if I'm moving on from Derrick Henry, I'm not trying to, because it's going to be hard to get a player like him. There's no player like him. And the people that are close to Derrick Henry, they already have their teams. And their teams are not – and they're younger than Derrick Henry, and their teams are not allowing them to leave the building. They signed them to long-term – now, Josh Jacobs may be a different story. I think he – they're still trying to may sign him to a longer term deal. So he's probably the only guy that you would potentially have an opportunity to get if the Raiders, LA Raiders, Las Vegas Raiders don't sign him back. But I'm not trying to get another Derrick Henry. What I'm trying to do is get a guy that can pair with Hassan Haskins, because I think Hassan Haskins is a tough runner. He's a good between the tackles runner, but he also can catch passes out the backfield. I need a running back that I can, you know, get in tandem with him. So if Hassan Haskins is my running back, with the new offensive line, I expect him to get over 1,000 yards. But then I expect that other back that I bring in, you know, 400 or 500 yards. So together, we have Derrick Henry numbers. But one thing that we do have in addition to that that we didn't have, now we got two guys that can catch the ball out the backfield. Derrick Henry wasn't that type of back. Again, he can catch some, but I couldn't line him up at wide receiver in a slot and ask him to run an angle route, out route, or in route. It wasn't in his repertoire. So it's tricky because I'm not trying to replace him, but I do need to replace him because he's getting older.
Replace the production.
Exactly.
You're not going to find another running back, you know, in free agency or off the streets that brings the same – I don't know the word I'm looking for here, but the same oomph that Derrick Henry brings.
That bring that presence, exactly.
Yes, the same presence, or that it doesn't give the same, you know, fear to opposing defenses that Derrick Henry does. To that same point, you know, Dontrell Hilliard and Deontay Foreman, when Derrick Henry went down with an injury last year, those two, you know, the run game
didn't
really
suffer.
Didn't take a step back.
They kept going.
But it's the two of them. While they could replace the numbers and the yardage, it's Derrick Henry is so special because he can do those things himself.
Yeah.
615-737-1025 is our phone number. The Predators on the road in Toronto tonight. Chris Mason will join us coming up next to preview that game. Caroline Willie, D-Mace, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.